There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today. And I'm really excited to bring on performance chef Noel Ferretia on Super Athlete Radio today. Did I get your last name right?
Oh, you got it right. Perfect. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. And I noticed you brought your bling to the show today.
I had to. You know, I feel like a special occasion, I usually bring it out for a special moment. So I think it's a special moment right now. So why not bring out the bling? Just for you, man. Just for everybody.
Yeah, we're honored. And just to people that are listening that don't have the video, what is the thing on your finger?
So it's my Super Bowl ring. So I used to work for the Eagles for about 2 years. And I was there from the 2017 season when they went all the way to the Super Bowl and beat the Patriots. So as part of a job, I was able, like everybody in the facility was able to get a championship ring. So thank you to the team. And thank you to the organization for that moment for everybody. So it was a big moment. I look at it almost, not almost every day, but I just look at it thinking like, damn, it's what I wanted as a kid. Or not as a kid, but like going into this industry. Yeah. It would be cool to win a championship, be on a championship team, work for elite athletes, and able to like bring a championship home. And, you know, I was able to do that.
That's awesome. And the Philadelphia Eagles organization is regarded as like a very well-run organization. And it seems like that was a very nice, like they don't have to give all the staff Super Bowl rings, right? Like,
not at all. Not really. Yeah. I don't think so. They definitely don't, but I think they appreciate the work that everybody in the organization, everyone from the staff, they all put in for it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well deserved. That's awesome. And then Noel, before we get there, could you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you ended up in this space?
Yeah, so a little bit about myself. My name is Noel Ferretia. I was born and raised in Silver Spring, Maryland. And when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a chef. So for me, everyone knew me as a boy that wanted to cook. So once I got to college, once I got to high school, did cooking classes and stuff like that. But once I got to college, did culinary arts. And I decided, all right, I wanted to work with athletes, be a professional chef, be a private chef, all that. So I decided, you know, let me do culinary nutrition. So when I got my bachelor's in culinary nutrition, got a nutrition degree, and my first job was working for the Eagles. So I decided that would be the perfect job to kind of get myself into being a private chef, work with these elite athletes. So that's kind of the start of it. But there's definitely more to the backstory.
Mm-hmm. And you said that your ancestry, you're Cameroonian.
Cameroonian, yeah. Second generation, born in the U.S. My family, my parents, both are from Cameroon, came to the States back in the 80s.
And then is there any specific foods or dishes that you had growing up that you apply now, some potentially?
For my clients, probably not, because everyone's I'm more American-based. I'm born and raised an American. But the stuff that this whole deal to my heart, like we have okra soup.
Okay.
Fufu and arrow, a lot of suya. I was in Cameroon last month, so I had a lot of suya.
What is suya?
It's basically just kind of like grilled beef.
Okay.
Like on skewers or chopped up. They have like special seasoning. It's like pretty much ground peanuts with different seasonings mixed in and whatnot, and usually like a topping on the beef. I should have bought you some, man.
Yeah. That sounds amazing. That sounds so good. And then when you arrived with the Eagles, what did they outline to you in terms of how they wanted their players fueled, or did they give you an outline what it was?
So for my job, I was an intern coming in, so mm-hmm. I didn't really have much of a say. Like the guy who recruited me, I was kind of following his plan. He was a team dietitian and team court, had a nutrition for the team. And I was kind of following his plan of his philosophy, which was protect, build, and fuel. And basically, it's basically carbs, vegetables, and protein.
Okay.
You know, so that was
our... And then did each one of those go with protect, build, fuel?
Yeah. So protect was mostly the veggies.
Okay.
Fuel was the carbs, which would be your starches, your rice, your grains. And your build was the protein. Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. So that was our philosophy when I was working for the team, making sure that all the players incorporate that on all their plates.
Yeah. And then I know it's a full-time job for a lot of those guys to be able to keep that weight on. Is that legit for the linemen in terms of what they need, the amount that they need to eat to be able to to maintain that weight?
Yeah, because I think they require more calories. They definitely did require more calories throughout the week. And remember, they're practicing too. They're burning a lot during the week. So to maintain that, they have to eat more during the week. So what we did at the facility, we made sure players eat breakfast, pregame. They get like snacks around for the guys and stuff like that. And also we have a pre-practice snack. So when my job was year two was to make pre-practice snacks. So it'll be like quick little meals, it's like a pre-lunch. Think about like chicken skewers, beef skewers with some rice and some fruit, like fruit plates, stuff like that. Sliders, we'll have sliders for them. Some with cheese, some without cheese, because players be really picky. You got to have the cheese for them. Mm-hmm. We'll have little stuff like that for the guys to go out before practice because, you know, practices are long.
So what would be the reason for that and those food choices before practice?
The reason for that is because we wanted something that we know they're going to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, they're always going to we know they're going to eat sliders. So we have the carbs with the bread and a beef patty for protein. We know they're going to eat like two or three before practice, and it'll hold them off to lunch. Mm-hmm. Because they have a big gap in between. All right, they have meetings in the morning. After that, they may have to go work out from working out. It's meetings in the morning. After that, get ready for practice. From practice, they come out of practice, they go work out. And after that, working out, they go get lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's legit a full day. Like it's a big gap in between. So we got to fill it up with snacks, smoothies, and pre-practice snack. So to make sure they're fueled throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So.
And then when did you start developing your own philosophy?
I think it's still developing now.
I love that.
Yeah. It's never ending. It's a never ending quest. Like as a chef or even a nutritionist, I think we're always gathering new ideas, new concepts to build and work upon on, you know, trying to fuel our clients. And fuel these athletes, whoever it is. It could be a business person who wants to get through the day. It could be an athlete who's trying to make it to the next season, or the next season, and the season after that, or even just a stay-at-home mom who's just trying to stay fit, you know, trying to look good for her husband, you know. It's our job as the chefs and nutritionists to make sure we adapt and change with the clientele, you know, you're working with.
And then for all of those demographics that you just mentioned, what do you feel like are maybe some high-level tips that you could provide them that could help like have sustained energy throughout the day? Like maybe stay away from this, or this might help add energy. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think my biggest thought, depending on different clientele people, is find out what works for you. Mm-hmm. And stick to that plan. Everyone's different, but obviously have your fruits throughout the day, have your like protein bars throughout the day, or if you have a granola bar. Obviously, stay away from like high fatty food, like your fast food, even though it's easier to kind of, you know, to kind of fuel yourself up. But it's a short term problem, not for a long term solution, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would just say definitely, obviously, drink your water, drink your hydrate often, and definitely just, you know, have your snacks throughout the day to keep yourself kind of like fuel, like keep yourself you filled up, you know.
And then if you pick up a new client and you say, find, you know, what works for you, and they're like, well, I don't really know, what would your process be to find that out with them?
I guess it's trial and error. So I'll have to look at, okay, you're a professional athlete. All right. So let's say you're football. I can tell, all right, maybe he's definitely needs high protein in mm-hmm. his diet. So I'll make sure we increase his protein intake, have a lot of protein, and maybe, and also a lot of veggies, and definitely maybe a little bit of carbs. I typically don't like admitting carbs. People do the keto diet, would take out carbs and starches. I don't like doing that. I think you should be able to have carbs, just have a low amount, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't take it completely out of your diet, you know. So I'll try to figure out, we should try to figure out what works for the client or the athlete. So trial and error, basically, and see how they feel, like, after the first day, like, or 2 days or a week. See how they feel, like, hey, chef, this works. I feel good. I feel fueled up. I feel like I'm not tired. Chef, you know what? Let's stay away from the pasta. I feel tired after, you know, like your food is good and everything, but I feel tired. Can we just try something different? And I'm like, I'm always open to it. Like, yeah, sure, let's try some. Yeah, you know, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, we adjust.
And then when you say high protein, do you base it on what their body weight is in terms of grams of protein, or is it each player different? How do you kind of
each
look
player
at that?
Is different? And I'm sure, like for me, I'll have to talk to the dietitian. And they give me their input if they're that serious.
Okay.
Typically, some clientele or some athletes aren't as serious or to the T compared to others. So I some dietitians I reach out to, I talk to them, ask them, hey, what does this person need as far as protein? You know, and they'll give me input. I was like, okay, cool. I can incorporate that into my cooking for them, you know. But some guys, like one of my other clients, not so much. Just as long as like almost 8 ounces, 7 ounces protein, like between each meal, he's straight. Mm-hmm.
And then how long were you with the Eagles and what were your positions there?
So I was there for 2 years. So my position there was kind of nutrition intern. Mm-hmm. And then I became like a performance chef for the team. So I wasn't running the whole operation as far as kitchen, but I was like the bridge, the liaison between the kitchen staff and the football ops staff. So I'll go between both sides saying, maybe a player will have a complaint, say, hey chef, could we get like some more some soul food dishes, like some mm-hmm. more hearty dishes or whatever, you know? And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll tell the executive chef that. I'll let him know their voice is complaint. And then later that week, you'll see it on the menu, or next week, you'll see it on the menu. Mm-hmm. On opposite side, like, hey chef, what's on this week? Would team need a team lunch or a team? Would they need an early lunch or a late lunch, depending on the schedule? Because I practice meetings. I'll go to the team football ops side. I'll go to the dietitian, ask him. He both look at the schedule and say, yeah, you know what? Let's incorporate a snack here. You know, may not be a full lunch, but let's incorporate a snack here and extend lunch to be longer to make sure the guys are fueled up. And this will be doing, because remember, the schedule always changes. Mm-hmm. We have OTAs. This is when I was working for the team, we have OTAs, which is from March up until like June. We have a little break in between for the staff because players are away for vacation and whatnot. Then we get to July. Late July is full training camp. Mm-hmm. So everyone's just rolling. Everyone's on every day. Everyone's in the facility. Everyone's working every day. And the players are there all day. So we have
a lot of food going. Yeah.
And we're not just feeding the players only. We feed the staff in the building, the grounds crew, grounds crew. We got the
operations,
football ops, coaches, human resources, marketing department. Everybody's coming to us at the facility. So it gets hectic during training camp season. So, but we keep it rolling when I was there. So it was a really good 2 years over there. And I built a lot of relationships with the players and whatnot. So I guess for me and my position, I pretty much was closer to the players compared to our cook, our line cook, which was Tim. Mm-hmm. He was a guy in the morning that'd be there from like 5 a.m. and like just rocking, making sure when the players get in, you know, he knows every player's meal, like order. He knows everyone's like how they make their omelets, their breakfast dishes. He knows how to make everything. So we built those relationships with those guys. So it was just definitely a cool atmosphere to be around.
And then what do you feel like is the biggest takeaway that you learned from Tim or the executive chef or someone else there that you're like, okay, I need to make sure I apply this when I go out on my own?
I guess the biggest thing is you're dealing with people.
Okay.
You know, everyone wants to be treated a certain way. So I think a lot of it's respect for and I think you carry on in life in general. It's respect. I think the biggest thing is respect. And making sure, like, we're in the hospitality industry, make sure the people are happy, make sure the people are, like, taken care of. And once you take care of them, they take care of you. You know, everything mm-hmm. else works out.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then maybe kind of, like, high level here, whether it's a pro athlete or elite performer in, you know, business or, you know, a different sector, what principles do you feel like they need to apply to fuel for their peak performance? What kind of principles do you believe in, or like, this is something that you need to do consistently?
Find what works for you is one. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm trying to think. Everyone's different. I guess it's a routine.
Okay.
I think setting up a routine is really good. Even myself, I'm still trying to work on my own routine because it always changes depending on the clientele I work with, depending on my other projects. But I think finding a routine and keeping yourself busy and consistent is very big, because even the small wins can end up being big wins. So by staying consistent, staying focused and locked in, kind of having goals, a plan set, routine is definitely one of, in principle. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. we should definitely.
You can use whatever word you want. I want to make sure I'm
answering the questions properly.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, and then why do you feel like a routine is important?
Because if you don't have a routine, I feel like you get lost. If you don't have a routine, you feel like you don't have you get lost like of what you're typically doing. Like, I mean, I'm sure you have a routine during throughout your week or throughout your day to kind of like, okay, I have to do these things. If it ain't, if I'm not doing it, it goes out of whack, you know, or it sets you, I think it sets you up for bad habits, you know, if you don't, if you don't have a routine set up or established.
And then are you a believer in meal prep as part of that routine from people? What do you think of that?
Yes, I'm a believer in meal prep. For sure. If it helps you out to do your other activities during the day, like if you're an average person like myself and say, hey, I have a busy week, but I'm locking this 2 hours meal prep for myself, so I'm okay during the week. For sure, because you don't want to get during the week, your busy week, trying to figure out what you want to eat. You know, I think we all been there, trying to figure out, damn, what I want to eat today. And you find out like it takes like maybe an hour to figure it out.
Yeah.
But having an item already prepped out during the week, you know, kills all of that, you know. Basically, bam. Oh, I made chicken and rice and asparagus earlier on Tuesday. Let me heat it up, eat, then go about my business, you know. Yeah.
That's awesome. And then what happened when you left the Eagles?
So when I left the Eagles, my biggest thing was I wanted to start my own personal chef service. So I started MVP, Meals for Victory Performance. I didn't really have
that's
an
great
eye.
Name.
Thank you. At the time, I didn't really have an eye. I knew I wanted to work with athletes and I wanted to just be a personal private chef, but I didn't really have a plan. So let's say I decided to just, you know what? The team won the Super Bowl. I feel good about myself. I think I did 2 years. Let me just do my own thing now. But I realized, I'm doing my own thing is a lot different. You know, that security blanket working for a team was a big part of like, cause I had a consistent job working full time. So, and I have athletes coming in, hey chef, I need some services. But when you do your own thing, it's totally different. Me doing MVP was a leap of faith. So, and it worked out pretty well, but always there for improvements, you know? But I love being a private chef. I love interacting with different people, meeting them, learning their backstory, learning their like life story, their backstory of how they became to be. I enjoy it so much.
That's awesome. And then how did you get your first client?
Working for the team.
Okay.
That's why it was like a pipeline, you know? So working for the team, player asks you, you're a chef? Of course. Yeah. Can you do dinner for me and my girl? And then, you know, rest is history. You start one client, they post you up on their story or their Instagram page. After that, hey, bro, I seen you did a dinner for so-and-so. Can you do one for me too? And it just keeps going. It keeps going. Word of mouth.
And then where was the business now to where it is now?
I definitely picked up more MBA clients over the years, but just definitely doing networking connection. I made definitely a few moves. So from working in Philadelphia, it was really cool. By the opportunity to work in Memphis for an NBA player, worked for him for about six months. Worked for him for about a year, but during time in Memphis.
And were you in Memphis?
I was in Memphis for the time period. But when I was working for him in Memphis, he got traded to the Miami Heat.
Okay.
Back in 2020, pre-pandemic. So when he got traded, I followed suit with him to Miami, and that year they went to the finals. This is the 2020 season when he played against the Lakers. So I was kind of helping him out before he went to Orlando, before he went to the bubble, helping him train, helping him stay fit, stay good. And you know, when he was ready to lock in, he was able to lock in during the playoff season.
And then, are you just making the food for these guys, or is there a relationship built in terms of
every relationship? I think with these guys, every relationship is built differently. I think obviously it's a friend. Obviously, it's we're both me and the person. Cool. I'm cooking for I'm happy to have a chef. I'm happy to have a job. You know, happy to work with the client. But I think over time it builds more to a friendly relationship where it's like, you know, you become family to them. You know, they become your brother. They become your confidant. They say, hey, chef, like they're telling you about your problems that you didn't even ask for. You know, you know. So I think it's a trust between both parties, and I think it becomes very, like I said, personal as part of the job.
Yeah. And then, do you have specific dishes that you go to, or is it really just you got to have a very diverse set of skills.
I think it's a diverse set of skills. I feel as though, like, for me, I can cook for an NBA player. From an NBA player, I can switch over if I need to be kosher client. I have a kosher client, so if I need to make them kosher meals, I could do that as well. I have black clients who just want some Southern soul food cooking. I can do that as well. So I'm able to change and different depending on the clientele I work with. You know, I think as a chef, you should be able to like adjust and adapt to, especially as a private chef, you should be able to adjust and adapt to whoever you work with. You shouldn't be making the same stuff, you know, for all three different clients, you know.
And then where do you stand in terms of like food being fuel compared to the taste of it needs to be there as well?
I think it depends on the person. I mean, I think food should always taste good, you know, if you're going to enjoy it. But if you're someone who just likes bland stuff but wants just a fuel, like if you're someone who just wants, chef, I just want salt and pepper, don't need that extra stuff. All right, boss, you got it. You know, if that's what you need as a client, as a person, good, go ahead. You know, I'll make it for you. But I always try to hook it up for the clientele, you know, who I work with. But I think food should taste good. You should be looking forward to it, not dreading it, you mm-hmm. know.
And then what factors do you feel like go into the taste of it?
I think obviously seasoning. Are you using acids, spices? Are you using different sauces, glazes? What stocks are you using for like the grains? What for the vegetables are you using? Like what oils are you using? Are you using like olive oil? Are you using canola? Are you using sapphires? I think it just depends on your philosophy, your methods. You know, I'm a guy who loves glazes on proteins. I'm a guy who loves citruses, herbs. I love all that. So it just depends on the person's style of cooking.
What's a typical glaze that you'd put on a protein?
Oh, man. I love teriyaki, man. Teriyaki glaze is like my go-to. I love teriyaki. I have like an orange teriyaki sauce that's to die for. But typically teriyaki, sweet chili. I love those Asian glazes. It's really just typically my go-to.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. And then what are some typical spices?
Obviously, salt and pepper, typical spices. You got to have those. Onion powder, garlic powder, cumin, paprika, smoked paprika, cayenne pepper. Kind of thing. What else? I forgot. Kind of thing. Put me on the spot, man.
Yeah. Hey, I can always add more seasonings to my Italian spice rack.
You know, oregano, rosemary. Like,
I love
Italian,
rosemary.
Yeah, for sure. It's so strong. Thyme, Italian seasoning. I'm trying to think. I wish I had my pantry right here. I could just show you, just pull out stuff for you guys.
Yeah.
But that's off the top of my head.
Did you make something for the Super Bowl?
I had a party this past weekend, so I worked the whole event.
Okay.
It was like a 7-course type of thing, but it was just like small bites type of thing.
Okay. So we had that makes sense for something like that. Yeah.
So we had like wings. We had like a wings kind of setup, where it's like buffalo, lime, orange teriyaki, jerk barbecue. I had like my crab bites, it was like little mini crab cakes. I had like a Meyer lemon little aioli on top of it. I have my MVP sliders.
And what are those?
Basically, it's just beef sliders, which consist of caramelized onions, Gouda cheese, some bacon, my MVP sauce, and a lemon garlic mayo on the bottom with a brioche bun.
That sounds really good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
And then is there any stuff that you see on like social media on Instagram that just like, man, this is crazy in terms of what people are talking about in terms of cooking or nutrition or anything like that?
I mean, crazy and how? Is it good or bad? I see both.
Okay. Well, let's start with the good. What's the good crazy?
I think for me, I'm a sucker for artistry and food. So if I see a plate that's like a good artistry, like even like, I could just tell like the thought process of the chef, like, oh man, the chef had a thought process, like a story he's telling in his food. I can see it. I appreciate that. Like that's one thing is crazy. Like, man, that's a dope idea. I probably wouldn't think of that, you know? Yeah. Or if they use like kind of like a lot of different techniques like molecular gastronomy, that's also crazy tech. That's crazy style of cooking that people do. If I see that
molecular astronomy,
molecular gastronomy, which is like, yeah. So it's basically like science and food kind of,
sure.
I don't want to say the definition because I might get it wrong.
Sure.
But it's like pretty much like bringing science into food, you okay. know, doing crazy stuff like making making bubbles and stuff out of like sugar water, like stuff like that. So it's crazy. I gotta show you the videos or something like that. But I always appreciate those type of stuff because I can't do it.
Sure.
Or I can't. I mean, it take a lot. I think I can't do it right now. I probably could if I probably study it, I could sure. probably do it. But
yeah.
Like I just appreciate that the style because it takes a lot of time to do those things. You know, it takes a discipline to do that. But stuff that the bad crazy I see is where people try to go viral and try to make like I'll see like a burrito wrapped in a pizza roll, deep fried, and like I'm just like, dude, why are we doing this? But yeah. I know it's for viral, it's for like clicks, it's to bring people to your restaurant. But like, dude, you know you're not gonna eat that thing. Like, yeah. come on, man. That's the bad part of I think social media, I guess these days, is everyone just trying to go viral by any means.
Yeah.
And I just know for myself, I can never do that.
Like, yeah.
You know, I think I have too much pride.
Yeah.
in my work.
And then, can you, what do you mean? How do people tell a story through what they create? That's awesome.
I think, I think storytelling with what they create is, I guess, it's like, I guess, like, I'm trying to find the words for that. I guess I think most dishes have a backstory, whether it's from your culture,
okay,
whether it's from your past experience. Like I guess the other day, I made like fish and grits, but my story was that okay, it's like a southern dish, but my story was all right, I'm gonna deep fry this catfish and cornmeal, and I'm gonna use like grits, but I'm gonna use purple rice grits. So it's my own style. I love invoking colors in my food. So I love using like different different versions of instead of using regular grits, purple rice grits was definitely like appealing to me. Mm-hmm. I want to try that out. And I know that back in Black culture, for soul food culture, we use okra, and even I mean being part African, we have okra soup in our culture. So. See, using okra was definitely feeling like home again, you yeah. know. So I included that into the dish. So I made like a catfish, fried catfish with okra stew, with heirloom tomatoes and purple rice grits. So basically, it's just telling a story of kind of like of just I guess Black culture, because grits is a Black. It's definitely you've seen a lot of Black households. You mm-hmm. know, grits is definitely a big breakfast dish. It can be an entree, you know, you can combine it with shrimp and grits, catfish and grits, fish and grits. It's big in most Black households. And definitely incorporated that, showing obviously my Black roots. And catfish is a big thing in the Black community, in the Black, you know, household as well, or Black community or soul food community. You know, just everyone loves fried catfish. So mm-hmm. kind of putting all those elements together, kind of, I think for me, made a wholesome, a cohesive dish of just telling the story of the culture of, hey, this is like from Africa all the way to America, to the South. And, you know, you're basically, here I am. That's what, basically why I gathered, you know. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, that was great. No.
I know other chefs who could probably explain it better, but I just think that every dish should just tell a story.
Yeah.
In most cases.
That's awesome. And then why do you feel like having colors on there is important?
We eat with our eyes, so it makes it visually appealing. And makes it like we can just dig in, you know. I think we see some dull plates every now and then, where it's just like it needs to pop of color, just something to increase the overall appeal, you know. So I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, and then what else do you feel adds to the artistry other than storytelling and color?
How you plate the dish, that's the artistry. How you arrange the plate up, so like, one thing we do like as chef is like making sure we're artists as well. So we make sure that like how we arrange our plates are, we put the starch right here at 10 o'clock. We arrange the vegetables at 2 o'clock and we put the protein at 6 o'clock. You see, you're trying to envision that. We add our garnishes, how we add our sauces. You put it on top of the sauce. No, we put the sauce on top of the protein, or we put it under the protein. It makes a difference on how we visualize or how we like look at the plate, you know. how we arrange it. Do we do modern style? Do we break the? Do we break down the vegetables? We just slice up the vegetables a little bit, and we spread the protein a little bit and arrange it on the plate differently. I think it's different styles, like how we like as chefs. We have different styles of plating, traditional, modern. You know, it just depends on how we arrange it.
And then if I wanted to create something for my family, what would be your go-to meal?
For your family or like for me or like
actually, let's frame it as, yeah, we as say you come in and say, hey, we want you to do your best. We're down. We're flexible. We just want something that looks good and tastes good. What would you go to?
So this is my test, so basically this meal is like my scout meal to kind of get a feel of the clientele. So I make a chicken piccata.
Okay.
So every time I make this dish, it's usually 10 out of 10. Everyone loves it. So chicken piccata with a lemon caper sauce, with angel hair pasta, and some seasonal vegetables, usually broccolini, roasted or charred. Mm-hmm. Typically, and I obviously have with pasta, you got a breadstick. So typically I make that to see like how I make a good, I try to make a good impression for that dish first. So you can only make a first impression once as a chef. So
yeah,
make sure you go your best dish.
Yeah.
After that, if they like it, then you can have a bad day later on in the week or whatever. Yeah. No bad days, you guys. I usually go for that dish first. So
it's money in the bank.
Yeah. So after that, when I make that dish, it gets asked upon a lot from returning clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because for me, it's the way I pound it. Pretty much the chicken is getting pounded with a mallet, make sure it's flat. We bread it up. We do a breading procedure, like dry, wet, dry with some like flour, eggs, and some dry like breadcrumbs or whatever. And then we pan sear it real quick. Then we bake it, make sure it's fully cooked. After that, make our pasta, make our lemon caper sauce. So the lemon caper sauce is just like white wine, shallots, herbs, let it reduce. After that, add a heavy cream, let it reduce again, and add our lemons and lemon juice and all that stuff, and some butter. It's a fatty dish too. It's a hefty dish, but
sounds so good. You said it's piccata, chicken piccata,
chicken piccata. Yeah.
And then what's the piccata? What is that?
It's pounded. It's pretty much what it is.
And does that change the texture of the chicken or?
Kind of. I mean, it's just much flatter.
Okay.
Yeah, easier to eat. It's much spread out more, but I don't think it really changes the texture. It's still chicken. It's still chicken breast. You know.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome. And then how do you kind of view food overall? Being in the industry, do you feel like it's a super important part for like celebrations and events and day to day, or how do you kind of view that with food? Do you feel like it's underappreciated, overappreciated?
That's a tough one. I think it just depends on the person. Like, I think it depends on. For me, I mean, I guess for me, it just depends. Like for me, like because it's a job, I always appreciate food and cooking for like clients. Tell mm-hmm. who appreciate good food. But I know for me, after a long day's of work, and I don't want to eat my cooking, I'm going out late night. So yeah. I had a point when I was cooking for my guys in Vegas. They're mad at me because like dang, no, you make all this good food for us, but you over here going to Chick-fil-A late night, and I was just like, dude, I don't want my food. Yeah. And I see y'all enjoying it. I don't want to just jump in and just grab a plate. I make it. I taste it. I'm good.
Yeah.
But it's when it's the drive back when I'm like, damn, I'm hungry now. It was open. Oh, Chick-fil-A's open. Yeah. Bet, let's go over there real quick.
Yeah.
And then I get me a sandwich over there, and that's a meal, and I'm happy, you know. Mm-hmm. But obviously, like if I'm in the mood for a restaurant to go out to eat, I'll go out to eat, go get a tasting menu, multiple courses, I'm good. But like I think for me, it just depends on day to day, how I'm feeling. But food should always be appreciated, always.
Mm-hmm. And then any of your clients, did they have kids?
Oh yeah, I mean, most of them all have kids.
And then, do you have any techniques or just make it taste really good to get the kids receptive to what you're making?
Basically, that make it taste really good to make sure the kids sort of basically make it taste good so the kids love it, you know. And usually, once the kids love it, once the kids approve of it, you're set.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. Because I sometimes have a hard time getting my boys to eat.
Are they picky eaters or what?
They're picky, I guess, in terms of the stuff that I want them to eat.
Right. You know,
but their criticism of me has always been that my food doesn't taste that good.
Well, we'll work on that. I got you, bro. What's
yeah,
it look
yeah, like? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to come back swinging on them.
I think what it is, it's basically trial and error. I say as a chef or if you're a home cook or whatever, just keep practicing at home. Just keep doing it to get it right. Mm-hmm. Even myself, I test recipes all the time too these days, until I get it right, until what I get to my liking. So a big thing is just that, just it's you're cooking for your family. You're not cooking for the Queen of England or mm-hmm. you know she passed, but like mm-hmm. the King of England right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just cooking for your family. Make sure you're just practicing. You know, making sure like you know you understand. Okay, let me add a little bit more salt. You know, it's kind of bland. Let me add a little lemon juice to this, or maybe lime juice, or let me add some vinegar or something. Mm-hmm. You know, just trying to figure out what works for you and what appeases your palate.
Yeah, that's super helpful. You give me hope.
That's what I'm here for, man. Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
I love that. And then what is trending right now in the food industry that you've seen?
What's trending right now?
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not locked in like that.
Okay.
I'm still in my own world.
Nothing wrong with that, bro.
I know one of my mentors, yeah. he always like knocks me like, how are you? Like, you're a chef and everything, but you're not keeping up and stuff. I'm just like, dude, I'm just in my own world trying to just deal with my clients, deal with my clientele and whatnot. But I guess now restaurants these days, I don't know if it's just a Miami thing. I think aesthetics is what's drawing people to come in. Not so much the food. Obviously, even food, if it's really good, people can talk about it, rave about it.
Yeah.
But I think these days it's aesthetics, you know?
You know, I'm like that with when we go out to eat, like, because I'm down to eat whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, the aesthetics is what I'm looking at in terms of the restaurant, and then hopefully the food. I mean, hopefully the food's going to match the quality of the aesthetics.
Exactly.
But yeah, that resonates with me for sure.
You know, the poppy steak. You know, you see people coming in like with like the glitz, the flashiness of like, all right, here's our steak popping out of a treasure case, coming with full smoke. Yeah. People pay for that. It's for the experience, obviously. But the food is good, but definitely expensive as hell. You know. Yeah. But if you got the money, go ahead. Do what you got to do. Go have a good time.
It comes out of a treasure chest?
I mean, I from the video I've seen, from something like that. I don't know. No, that's a good word. Like, just it's crazy stuff they do. It's cool stuff, you know?
Yeah. And then where do you see yourself going in the space 5, 10, 15 years from now?
I think that's another good question. The space, I still want to do I definitely want to do private chefing. I definitely probably would want to maybe own a restaurant or have a restaurant that I work with and just provide like menus and stuff and like, you know, basically work with the team, provide a menu, be like consulting and stuff like that. And just keep doing what I'm doing right now. I love it. Definitely want to build my relationship with clientele, with athletes, with business people, whoever I feel as though I could offer my services to and whoever, I feel as though like, it could be a mutual benefit for both sides. So I love people. I love working with people and whatnot. And that's what the industry is all about. You know, our industry, you're dealing with people.
And then with what you do, can you only take on 1, 2, 3 clients?
It depends on how you set your schedule up.
Okay.
It's just a weird thing because like if I have one power, I wish I could make like 10 of me.
Okay.
Because I could be everywhere with no issue, no problem. But as a private chef, you got to pick your job kind of wisely. Because I think some clientele may not need you as often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They may come in town like every so often, but want your services. But in a time, if you're freelance, I gotta pay my bills tonight. I gotta pay my bills like tomorrow. So it's like I can't bank on that. So to take certain jobs that's available to you and whatnot. But there's other clients who need you, but for months and months on end. But then you gotta charge them like a bigger. You gotta charge them like more because like you're taking me away from everybody else. You know. Mm-hmm. So some clients get it, others don't. But I just think it's hard because like. Our job is like everyone wants the same time period, so they want basically your Mondays and Wednesdays are always gonna be booked if you're meal prepping because everybody wants meals on Monday to start your week off mm-hmm. and the middle of the week, you know. Mm-hmm. typically everyone eats out on Friday, so you're not really busy on Friday unless people hire for other services. So it just depends, man. It's tough because like you can take those one day clients who want a dinner party for their friends and family, but you just know that it's only gonna be a one time thing typically. But the other clients who need you day in and day out, but it's like, all right, like it's a set salary for that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it may step on other opportunities you want to take on. So you got to pick your battles.
And then are there performance chefs like yourself out there who kind of build a brand like MVP and then they bring on chefs underneath them that can go to different places, or is that pretty unique?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's plenty of other chefs who have done it, who have probably built their brand. I got the guy I talked to on Instagram that I recently just connected with, and he kind of has that going where he has like his main brand. He's in Detroit, and but he traveled out to like he has the main person working there, mm-hmm. but he traveled out to like Miami and stuff like that to cook for athletes and stuff. So I see what he does, and it's really inspiring. It's really dope, you know. Yeah.
And then if you were going to start a restaurant today, what would the theme be?
Chicken wings, man.
Chicken wings. Okay, yeah, interesting.
I'm a lover of wings, so yeah. Like if I start a restaurant, it'd definitely be a wing spot.
Yeah,
for sure.
And then what makes a good chicken wing? You feel?
I think
the glaze,
the sauces, but I think how you fry it.
Okay.
Obviously, size matters. How you fry it? Are you using breading in the chicken wings? What type of breading are you using? Like, are you kind of using flour, cornstarch? Are you using rice? Like rice flour? It's a style of the frying, I guess. I guess it just depends on a lot of factors. For me, a good chicken wing has obviously good size, a good crispiness to it, and a good sauce, mm-hmm. you know, to coat the wings. Because some sauce coats better on the wings than others. Like, if your sauce is I think for me, if I was going to fry some buffalo wings, I don't think I would use a breading, like a flour breading on it. Mm-hmm. I think buffalo sauce coats better just on a naked chicken wing, fried, mm-hmm. rather than breaded, mm-hmm. me personally. But I know if I'm going to do like an Asian glaze sauce, like I think the Asian glaze sauce sticks better on a breaded chicken wing. Mm. I think because of the sugar in it, mm-hmm. it sticks onto the wing better. So that's what I believe. Maybe it'd be different for others, but that's what I see. Like just, I think it depends on the sauces, your wings, and the type of breading you use.
And then what do you feel like goes good with wings?
Oh, I mean, depends on the wing. So me, like buffalo, uh-huh. of course, everyone loves their ranches and whatnot. But mm-hmm. I think I love blue cheese on my wings.
Okay.
I think for me, blue cheese have a sharper taste.
Yeah.
With the heat of the buffalo and the blue cheese, the coolness of it, that's perfect, man.
And then what other foods you feel like go with wings?
Oh, I mean, for like that, obviously, like, you know, French fries for sure.
Anything beyond French fry?
You know, huh?
Anything beyond French fry?
I think potato stuff.
Okay.
Potato type of side dishes. Okay. Go best with wings. I don't ever see myself eating wings with rice. I mean, you could, yeah. you know, flush your boat, but like, I think if I was going to do like wings, it has to be a potato side.
Yeah.
Like French fries, big sweet potatoes, like glazed sweet potatoes. I also do sweet potato fries, mashed potatoes. You can do that as well. That's for me personally. Everyone's different. Or even mac and cheese could go with it. But, mm-hmm. like, I just think wings always with fries. If you can't do fries because you're trying to keep healthy, do roast potatoes or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that. What would you name it?
Wings R Us. I don't know.
Put you on the spot.
Like,
you
know, I know, right?
I can see it. I see the vision.
I'm working on it, man. I'm working on it. Give me a year or two.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's awesome. And then what is your learning process in terms of improving your craft? How do you go about – you say you test stuff a lot.
Yeah. So I think it's trial and error. I think for me, if I have a concept in my mind, I'll research the concept, I'll see if someone did it before. And if I see a dish somebody made and I liked it, I'll try to see, all right, what changes would I will make, or what improvements will I make, or how can I make it mine and make it my own signature, you know? Mm-hmm. So maybe someone made a nice breading or whatever for this dish. I'm thinking, okay, well, if I add baking powder or some cornstarch to this, it could probably make it more, make the breading more crispier. Mm-hmm. Or if I add a more, bit more seasoning to this, it'll probably bring out the citrus, probably get more, I get more citrus taste to it. So I try to always figure out how can I always improve this person's, this, improve this dish or this concept. You know, I pick one, I try to visualize it, how I want it come look and come out, and then I execute it.
And then what about if someone said they want to learn how to cook, what would you say would be the best process to do that?
Practicing at home.
Practicing at home.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be, if you want to just practice at home, definitely, obviously, if you can look up YouTube videos, play, there's plenty of like, just plenty of videos that teaches you how to do certain things. Once you build a foundation for yourself, mm-hmm. of like, of certain skills, you kind of have, you can kind of go from there, you know?
Okay. And then you mentioned before in terms of the importance of having guys eat before they practice. So I want to look at this from like a training perspective and like an adaptation perspective. Mm-hmm. There's do you have any specific thoughts in terms of what we should eat? You should eat some protein and carbs immediately after you work out, or eat before you work out, but not too much. Do you have any, so that's pre-workout, post-workout?
Yeah. So I'll basically eat before you work out, but not too much. So if you can do like a banana, some fruit, a fruit cup before, if you have a protein bite. I know when I was working for the Eagles, I made protein bites for the guys. So like mm-hmm. Peanut butter, chocolate chip protein bites, they killed that. Like it's hard to keep up with the guys making it for them, but that is, it was just enough for it, because making it for them, it was a good balance. It wasn't a full protein bar, but it was enough to hold them off for a pre-practice workout. Mm-hmm. So so that was a go-to for them. So I guess making sure you're fueled but not filled up. Mm-hmm. Satisfied but not full. So mm-hmm. that's a big thing. Post-workout, I believe after every workout I eat for myself, is try to make sure the last 30 minutes after working out, have a protein smoothie, you mm-hmm. know? A protein shake, whatever you can, to kind of rebuild those muscles after you tear them, you know, doing what you're doing, working out. Mm-hmm. Have a full protein shake, help rebuild that, and have your lunch or your dinner or whatever.
And then do you have a preference on the type of protein that you like personally, or that you usually have most of your clients use?
Typically for myself, I usually use Gatorade's protein powder.
Okay.
But my clientele, everyone's different. I had clients who use Vega.
Okay.
It was like a vegan type of protein. I used to use that a lot for the guys while working for the Eagles who wanted a vegan protein. We used Vega. That was a good brand. Hopefully I'm saying the name right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess preference. You know, obviously if some cost more expensive than others. So if you're on a cheaper cost, get whatever works for you. Whatever's cheaper, go for it. You know, but usually my go to just Gatorade protein.
Yeah, you find that works for you.
Yeah.
And then this might be a little bit more on the dietitian side, but for high performers who are watching this, listening to this, and they want to improve their energy and maximize their performance, what tips or fuel tips would you have for them in terms of using food as kind of fuel to be able to do that?
Definitely, I would just say definitely for that, you probably just stick to your veggies.
Okay.
But fruits and vegetables keep you energized throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Maybe stay away from like carbs unless you're wrapping up a day with like dinner or like lunch or something. Mm-hmm. But I guess for like throughout the week, like throughout your day, definitely have your fruits and veggies, your nuts, your nuts. That's also high energy. Trail mix, granola, stuff like that. It keeps you fueled, you know.
That's awesome. Okay, we're going to do some rapid fire here to end up. Wrap up. No. A biggest mentor in your life.
A biggest mentor. That's another tough question, man. Mm. I think for me, because I've never, I had different mentors, different periods of my life. So parents were my mentors for one point. Obviously, my parents were definitely my mentors at one point growing up. We go to the restaurant industry, your chefs become your mentors, your sous chefs. I worked for the Eagles. The dietitian, Michael Minnis, he was a big mentor, helping me out and kind of getting a feel of understanding the sports dietitian side, the sports performance side of our industry. And while working for the Eagles, working in the kitchen for the Eagles, the sous chef the sous chef Pee Wee, the other chef Tim, with other good mentors. I was kind of like learning a mat, learning their styles of cooking and stuff like that. Watching them work, interact with the players, knowing that it's about like dealing with people and whatnot. When I got to starting the private chef, I have a couple private chef friends that I looked as a mentor. One of my guys, personal chef Cal, he's one of a big mentor over the years. A recent chef that I recently connected with, my chef friend Aquino, Mr. Chef Aquino West, he has a spot in Rosie's in Miami. Definitely check it out. We have a chance.
It's called Rosie's?
Rosie's, yeah. He's been a mentor for me, kind of learning, just helping define my cooking, you know, and refine it and make it better, you know?
That's awesome.
So it just changes, man, bro, throughout the years. Even people like you know, you come across, like, you know, throughout your life, like, I have clientele who became mentors in me, you know, just talking to me, just talking and chopping up with my business and stuff like that, my life too. So it just depends.
That's amazing. Well, your curiosity is probably one of the reasons why you're so good at what you do.
Yeah, something like that.
Best book you've read in the last year?
The best book I read in the last year. I don't read books often, bro.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just gonna be honest. Like, I'm
well. Maybe let me reframe the question. So, like, best source of like information that you feel most improved your life in the last year? It doesn't have to be a book.
Come back to me on that. We have
ready for rapid fire.
If it was like 2 years ago, probably Joe Rogan. But these days, like, I can't think of the top of my head right now.
Okay, yeah. You're in your zone. Okay, and then biggest habit that's had the most value that you've added to your life in the last year, or taken away, bad habit that you've taken away, or a good habit that you've added?
I think now the habit of making video, cooking videos, just doing it,
okay,
has been definitely. Been probably the best habit, I guess, now, just kind of getting in the zone of just cooking and stuff, connecting with people appreciating your work. Because it's like, obviously, if your Instagram followers, they always appreciate you, love your work and whatnot.
Yeah.
But when you're posting on YouTube, you're going out, it's out to open for everybody. Yeah. You know? So when you have people connecting to you, say, yo, my gosh, you're so talented. Like, oh my God, I love your work. I love your, keep cooking, keep doing it. And people saying, man, chef, you don't ever give up. You keep posting videos, you know? And just to me, that means I'm doing something good, you know? Mm-hmm. Even though, like, I haven't blown up yet.
Yeah. Damn right. Yeah.
I'm just keep myself like just keep posting videos, keep doing the work, and everything will work out eventually, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cheers to that. I think that's a great way to wrap up. And then best way for people to reach out to you, what's the YouTube and what is the IG?
So the YouTube is Chef Noel's Private Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And my Instagram
great
is
name.
Thanks. Yeah. Instagram and TikTok is Chef Arnold _TheRealMVP. Obviously from MVP.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Cool. Noel Ferreira?
Yes, Noel Ferreira.
Thank you for coming on Super Athlete Radio, man. Appreciate you.
Always, man. Definitely do it again soon.